Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. Starring Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Tony Martin, and Meredith Wilson, with two special guests you will hear about in just a moment. And here is your host for the evening, Robert Young.
All right, Warren, and thank you. As we promised you last week, ladies and gentlemen, we're presenting Mickey Rooney tonight in a preview of the new picture, or I guess I should say his new picture, Huckleberry Finn. Of course, I don't need to tell you that if ever a story suited a star, or a star suited a story, Mark Twain's masterpiece and Mickey Rooney fit each other all the way. Well, we'll hear from Mickey a little later. But I want you to know now that our other guest star tonight is the glorious singing star of the Great Waltz, Miss Melissa Cortes. And now to get the show started, Meredith gives out with Happy Little Farmer. Last Thursday night, I introduced this little song. My uncle and my wife were very pleased with my rendition. So gather round me, boys and girls, and lend your shell-like ears, and I will teach the song to you with neatness and precision. Happy little farmer,
happy little farmer,
riding in a sleigh,
riding in a sleigh.
Giddy-up,
giddy-up,
giddy-up, it's time for play.
It's time for play.
When a little farmer,
when a little farmer,
puts away shame,
puts away shame.
Giddy-up,
giddy-up,
giddy-up, it's time for play.
It's time for play.
When the ground is covered with snow,
and the green things are used to grow.
I get out my toboggan,
I get out my toboggan,
and I hitch up dubbin,
and I hitch up dubbin,
and away through the field,
and away through the field,
I go,
I go.
Hey, happy little farmer,
happy little farmer,
riding in a sleigh,
riding in a sleigh.
Giddy up,
giddy up,
giddy up, it's time for play,
it's time for play. Happy little farmer, riding in a one-horse sleigh. Giddy-up, 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 it's time for play. When a little farmer puts away his one horse shay. Giddy-up, 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 it's time for play. When the ground is covered with snow, and the green things are used to grow, I get out my toboggan and I hitch up dubbin, and away to the field I go. Happy little farmer, riding in the one horse sleigh.
Good, Meredith.
Very good, Bob.
Well, I will say, speaking as a happy little farmer, that I could have done better if I'd had a few more hours in the hay.
Yes, I think you would.
Oh.
What were you doing up so early, Booby?
Booby?
Nickname I made up. why were you up so early, Booby?
Well, I'll tell you, Runt. I just made that one up. I always arise at the crack of dawn on February 2nd to go out and look for groundhogs.
That's right. Today's Groundhog Day.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, for the benefit of any non-farmers in our audience, let me explain that every February 2nd, the groundhog comes out of his hole and looks at the morning paper. If it says rain, he crawls back in again.
Well, that's wrong, Booby.
Oh,
when the groundhog comes out, he looks for his shadow. And if the sun isn't up yet on account of clouds or the early hours, he sits down and waits. Sometimes he is attacked by stoats or weasels. But in any case, it will rain very soon. Don't you think so, Booby?
Well, what makes you think so, Runt?
The bone in my ankle where I broke it always gets me when rain's coming.
Well, what's that got to do with the groundhog?
You'll find out.
Well, that's fine talk for a farm boy. I don't think you understand the problem. Now, Tony Martin, he probably knows. Tony?
Yes, Bob?
Do you know anything about a farm?
Well, I worked for 2 years in a pharmacy.
Well, what more can I ask? Look, will you settle a problem for us, Tony?
Shoot.
When the groundhog comes out of the hole, what is it?
Hamburger.
Oh. You sing, Rube. Get up there with your stick, run.
Okay, Booby.
Farmer Martin now hammers out Begin the Begin.
The sound of the music brings back like a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars. Down by the shore, an orchestra's playing. And even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin to begin. If it again is past all endeavor,
again I am begun from you.
June clutches my heart, and there we are, swearing to love forever. Till clouds come along to disperse the joy we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was waiting, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin. Let the love that was once a fire remain. Sleep like the dead desire I only remember when they begin to begin. Oh yes, let them begin to begin. Make them play till the stars that were there before return above you. Till you whisper to me once more,
was awfully good, Tony. Awfully good. Begin the begin. Begin the begin. It was awfully good, Tony.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you.
I must remember to send you a bottle of Dietus Timer, 1926. I think you'd like it.
Well, thanks very much, Frank, but I don't drink.
You don't drink?
No, but you can send you can send me a pair of military hairbrushes if you like.
Oh.
You see, I'll be at the Paramount Theater in New York. I'm leaving tomorrow night on a personal appearance tour.
Well, concert?
No, Frank. You see, I have a few dates I'm going to play with a band.
With a band? Oh, for foul. My boy, with your voice, you should be in opera. Do you know any operatic selections, Fillon?
Talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, well, Frank, I know a little opera. You see, I've been studying the prologue to Pagliacci in my spare time. Like to hear it?
Oh, I'd love to. Yes.
Si può... Si può.
Si può.
Si, signore.
Yes, well, yes. Yes.
Signore.
No, hold it. Just a minute, Tony. You have great talent.
Oh, you think so?
Yes, well, I'm certain of it. But if you could just make your top tones a little rounder. I mean, a little more pear-shaped, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Now, sort of like this.
Si poi! Si poi!
You see what I mean.
What happened? Where is he? Who got hurt?
No, Bob. You see, Bob, Frank is teaching me how to sing opera. He's going to make me an opera star.
Oh, Morgan's going to make you an opera star.
Yes.
Yes, I...
Frank, what's the idea of kidding Tony about a thing like this?
Mr. Young, you'd better adopt a different tone when you address me.
Hmm.
A man in your position never knows when he'll badly need the friendship of an impresario.
An impresario now?
Yes. I wonder if you boys have ever heard of Angelo Parmacetti. Some years ago, I was touring the opera houses of Italy, seeking new talent for the Metropolitan. Mm. To be specific, I was looking for a well-trained tenor and a well-favored soprano. I mean, if she could sing, it was so much the better. I traveled...
Now, just a minute, Frank.
Yes.
You were in Italy for some time, were you?
Yes, I've... Meredith, are there any Italians in your orchestra?
No, Frank.
Ah, volte bracissimo, signor. Quel bel piazzano. What a country. Oh, solo mio. Oh,
Frank.
So, huh?
I'd rather hear you lie than hear you sing.
Che vergogna. I hope it's just your youth. But how can I forgive you? Week after week. How can I control my hot Latin blood? Well, it's no use. I better go where I'm wanted, I guess. I think it's you. I say I better go where I'm wanted. Well, goodbye, fellas. I've got to... Goodbye. You don't...
Meredith, have you got a nail file?
I'm sorry, I haven't got one.
Oh, here's one, Bob.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, well, now that's different. If you're going to treat me with respect, I'll stay.
I got to hear it, Bob. I can't keep this up any longer.
No, and I told you to keep quiet.
I knew you were at the bottom of this, you glamour boy. Well, just for that, I won't tell you about my days as an impresario.
I want to hear it. Now, leave him alone, Bob.
You really want to hear it, Meredith?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'm getting to like you more every week, Meredith. In spite of your music. It's too bad you don't care for wine. My boy, I'd send you a bottle of Jesus
Frank.
On the 19th... What?
Martin's the one that doesn't care for wine.
Oh.
You promised Meredith a bottle last week, and he never got it.
He shall have a bottle before he's 24 hours older.
When I was 24 hours old, I had a bottle every hour.
A crass jest from an overdressed giant. I don't think I got that quite right, but he knows what I mean. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, I was looking for a tenor, but though I heard hundreds of singers, I couldn't find the man I wanted. I auditioned all kinds. Soprano, contralto, basso.
Groucho.
Chico.
Harpo.
No!
I didn't mean to say it. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, finally I reached a little town where the opera house seated scarce more than 200 people. I sat down and listened, bored to tears by the singing of a mediocre cast. And presently I fell asleep. Suddenly I was roused by the clarion tones of a most extraordinary voice. I sat up sharply in my seat. I knew I had found my man.
What was he singing?
Oh, I can still hear his voice in faultless Italian. Pinocchio, 5 cents a bag.
That's the candy butcher song, Maida.
You mean he was selling peanuts in the aisles?
Yes, but I knew talent when I heard it. I signed the peanut vendor up and brought him to America. I coached him personally, trained him in every role. Day and night, I worked on his solfeggio. Polished his cadenzas, clipped his staccato, and shaved off his mustache.
You did all that for him, huh, Frank?
Yes, and let me tell you that former Piedmont vendor was the most faithful, industrial pupil I ever had. I can never forget his patience in giving audition after audition, always with discouraging results. But he wouldn't give up, gentlemen, and where do you think he is today?
Where?
Selling hot dogs at Santa Anita.
Oh.
Well... I got out of the opera after that.
You're willing to do the same thing for Tony Martin.
I'm willing to guarantee I could do it. In 3 weeks, I could carry Tony Martin from obscurity to oblivion.
What?
Why, look what I did when I was in the carnival business.
All right, gimmick. Tell us what you did in the carnival business.
There were no gimmicks in my carnival, Young.
No?
Everything was just as open and above board as we could afford to have it. To tell the truth, I did start with a slightly crooked wheel and three walnut shells. But I swear to you that as soon as we got going, I gave up the shells. The wheel was much safer.
Did you make any dough, honest John?
Did I? The people all over the country flocked to see my show because I had the world's greatest attraction.
What was it?
A mugwump.
Mugwump? What's that?
Well, a mugwump is a rare hybrid bird, a cross between a Zulu tentavove and an Arabian turkey. And the thing that made it even rarer was that there are no turkeys in Arabia.
Well, gee, what did it look like, Frank?
My boy, the appearance of a mugwump cannot be described. It was the little fellow's posture that caught the public fancy.
His posture?
Precisely. I always presented the mugwump in the scenery of his native habitat, sitting on the limb of a tree in the strange position that gave him the name of mugwump.
Uh-huh. How did he sit?
With his mug on one side and his wump on the other.
What?
Well, I'll see you later.
Say, Bob, I'm about to make an interesting little scientific experiment you may remember. Will you help?
Why, certainly, Warren. Where do we go?
Right here. You see, I want you to help me demonstrate to every woman listening how she can be sure of getting her money's worth when she buys coffee.
Well, how are you going to do that?
Well, first, smell this unopened can of Maxwell House coffee.
Can't smell a thing.
All right. Now, here's an unopened package of coffee packed the ordinary way. Smell anything?
I certainly do, and it smells great.
Sure it does. But that's flavor being wasted, fading away. Flavor you'll never get in your cup. It's air, you know, that steals away coffee flavor. And all coffee, whether ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor the moment it's roasted, if exposed to the air. In fact, ground coffee, packed in ordinary containers where the air can get at it, loses as much as 45%, nearly half, of its flavor in only 9 days. Right there, you have the reason why we take Maxwell House coffee, still fresh and fragrant from the roasting oven, and pack it in the familiar blue super vacuum can. No air can get in, so no flavor can get out. Maxwell House comes right into your kitchen with all its wonderful flavor and fragrance sealed in, none wasted. Not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. So treat yourself to a pound tomorrow, won't you? Today, with a marvelously enriched blend and new process of roasting, this new Maxwell House coffee is more delicious, more downright satisfying than ever. It's truly good to the last drop.
We continue with a number I find it a little difficult to describe. But as I understand it, Meredith Wilson had a dream the other night about a symphony orchestra holding a jam session. The boys were in the groove trying to play Somebody Stole My Gal with symphonic licks. Anyway, Meredith, always on the alert for musical novelties, jumped out of bed and wrote down the score just as he had dreamed it. So here it is, a jam session in white tie and tails.
Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen, here is Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. Poor Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, has had an argument with Mother. Much against his will, he's taking Snook for a walk in the park to let his temper cool. Listen to Daddy's temper cooling.
Daddy!
Oh, Snook, I don't think I can bear the sound of your voice today.
Why?
I don't feel like answering any silly questions. I'll keep walking, Snook. Play with your ball.
Why did you come to the park, Daddy?
Because I did.
Why?
Oh, because the fresh air is good. And I like to be near the trees and the flowers and relax in the sunshine.
Do you?
It's a lot better than being cooped up in that house. Now, do you know why I came to the park?
Uh-huh. Mommy chased you out.
Now, don't start, Snooks. I'm warning you.
I ain't doing nothing, Daddy.
Well, I won't tolerate any nonsense from anybody today. Would you have the nerve to hop a boat for China?
Huh?
Nothing. Be careful where you throw that ball.
I like it here, Daddy. Is we coming here every day?
Are we?
I asked you first.
I'm not asking you anything. I'm correcting your horrible English. Is we going to come here? You wouldn't say I have went home, would you?
No.
Well, why not?
Because you ain't went yet.
Oh. What can you expect when you marry out of your class? Now, stay on the path, Snooks. You're not allowed to walk on that grass.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. Some broken-down law. I don't know why the dickens they have grass if you're not allowed to walk on it. I pay my taxes. My money goes into these parks. Guess I can walk on my own grass if I want to.
Let's walk on it, Daddy.
You're darn right I'll walk on it. Come on, let's jump on it.
Whee!
Come on, throw me the ball, Snooks. We'll play catch.
All right.
Hey, you, get off the grass.
Huh? Oh, here comes a nosy flatfoot.
Hit him with the ball, Daddy.
What's the matter with you? Can't you read that sign?
Well, you see, officer, my child's ball happened to roll on the grass.
What do you think I am?
A nosy flatfoot.
What's that?
Oh, nothing. Snooks, just go sit on that.
Well, no, I don't want to.
Oh,
no.
Please,
Snooks. Mom, you said he was a nosy flatfoot, and you said we could jump on the grass.
I wish I was dead.
Jump on the grass, huh? Why don't you tear up the flowers, too?
All right.
Snooks. No, please, officer.
Well, I'll just give you a ticket, Mr. Wise Guy, for trespassing, and maybe you'll learn not to call me a nosy flatfoot.
All right. Give me a ticket and make it snappy. And let me tell you something. If you think you can go around molesting innocents, hit it.
Sign this.
You bet I will. I've got your shield number, and you'll be sorry you ever started with me. I work my fingers to the bone to make both ends meet. And when I want a little pleasure, you ruin it for me.
What are you laughing at?
Daddy's trying to talk like Mommy.
You keep quiet, you little snooper. When I was...
Okay. Now get off the grass and stay off.
Come on, Joe.
Are we going home, Daddy?
No, it's no better there. If it's not one policeman, it's another. Come on. I'll fix that rubber-nosed cop.
Can I dig here, Daddy?
Yes. I'm going to sit on this bench and read. Guess there's no law against that.
Is he mad, Daddy?
No, I'm very happy. Oh, stop that. Now amuse yourself and don't bother me.
Can I make a pie from the dirt, Daddy?
Yes.
What kind of a pie?
Any kind. Let me read.
Shall I make a chocolate pie?
Yes.
No, coconut pie.
All right, make a coconut pie.
Will you eat it?
No.
Yay!
Now, don't you start that. Make what you like and don't bother me.
All right. Go in and out the window. Go in and out the window. Daddy.
So, what is it?
I want to see the swan.
No, finish the pie.
I don't want.
You never finish anything. You jump from one thing to another. Why don't you concentrate on one thing and finish it?
Why?
Oh, leave me alone.
What shall I do?
Do nothing.
How will I know when I'm finished?
Oh, will you please let me read?
All right. Daddy.
Oh, now, what is it?
What's this little thing crawling on the ground?
That's an ant.
How can you tell?
How can I tell what?
That it ain't an uncle.
Now, what are you talking about? What's that got to do with uncles?
You said it was an ant.
It is an ant. But when I say ant, I don't mean aunt, I mean ant.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
I feel fine. The aunt you're thinking of is A-U-N-T. Like Aunt Sophie.
Uh-huh.
This ant is A-N-T. It's a crawling insect with a fat little body and spindly legs. Does that sound like Aunt Sophie?
No, that's Aunt Tessie.
Never mind that. Just let me read.
All right. Daddy.
Well?
What's this?
Let me see. Why, that's a horseshoe. That's good luck.
Is it?
Why, sure. Give it to me. Here, I'll spit on it and throw it over my shoulder. Then we'll be lucky. Here goes. Oh. Oh. I'm afraid to look.
You broke the window in the policeman's little house, Daddy.
Oh.
Hey, were you lucky, Daddy?
Well, I thought you'd try something like that, you lug.
Now, wait a minute, officer. It was an accident.
You said you'd fix him, Daddy. I'm going to get the horseshoe.
Innocent citizen, eh? Busting windows, no less. You come along with me, brother.
Now, look, officer, I can explain.
Tell it to the judge. Yeah, what's the matter?
Don't take my little daddy.
Well, all right, I'll let you go, mister, but only for the kid's sake. I'm going to give you another chance.
Oh, thank you, officer. I'm awfully sorry.
Ain't he going to take you away for throwing the horseshoe, Daddy?
No, he's giving us another chance, Milk.
Is he? All right. Whee!
Look!
Ain't I lucky?
Come on along, the both of you.
Oh, you...
Now, Miss Melissa Corgi sings for us one of the pleasantest arias in all opera, The Waltz from Romeo and Juliet. Miss Corgi.
Oh,
on you later. Well, Warren, there's a wonderful fragrance of freshly made coffee in the air that tells me it's time right now for that familiar Thursday evening custom of ours.
Right you are, Bob. Time right now for a moment of relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of the new Maxwell House coffee.
And friends, as always, we're inviting all of you everywhere to join us in this friendly custom in your own home. We think you'll enjoy this show of ours still more over a cup of the coffee that's good to the last drop. Now, Warren, if you'll do the honors, I'll give the nod to Meredith, and he'll pour out the music.
We now pause for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
Bob Young again, and we continue our Maxwell House Good News program. Tonight, the MGM Theater of the Air presents a truly important American play, Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain, starring America's greatest young actor, Mickey Rooney. For our broadcast tonight, written by Hugo Butler, who also wrote the screenplay, Mr. Mankiewicz, MGM producer, has assembled the same cast who appear in the picture. Mickey Rooney is Huckleberry Finn, Slave Jim, played by Rex Ingram,
Widow Douglas
by Elizabeth Risden, Huck's Pat by Victor Killian, and Miss Watson by Clara Blandick. The music for this preview was scored by Franz Waxman. The Mississippi has inspired many exciting stories of life along its banks. The warmest, most thrilling, and adventurous of these is the story of Huckleberry Finn, as the river told it to Mark Twain. Huck, as you remember, was adopted by the Widow Douglas and her sister. Huck's father, a drunken ne'er-do-well, having apparently disappeared for good. And so, Huck was rapidly being civilized.
Oh, I was trying, all right, but it seems I've always done things just the opposite the way the good folks does them. For instance, fishing and smoking instead of going to school and wearing shoes. It just shows that a body brings trouble on himself, especially when he tells a lie instead of telling the truth. Well, that's how I got in that awful mess the evening before the last day of school, the evening before the day when I was supposed to get promoted, only, of course, I wasn't going to get promoted because I'd been playing hooky. It was after dinner that night, and I was sitting out in the orchard smoking and reading a letter to Jim, the Widow Douglas's slave, and we was...
Read me that little part again, Hook, about Joey.
Here it is. Joey is over his bilious fever and is getting better every day. Looks like he is going to be a big man like you. That's all. Say, how long your wife and child been in the Free State, Jim?
Oh, ever since my wife's pappy saved up enough money to buy him from the Thatchers. 2 or 3 years ago. I'd go in there someday, Hook. I've been saving money to buy myself. And when I saved enough money, I'd want to buy me and head for that old Free State. And then I'd want to see little Joy and my wife and sling around and be free. Of course, sometimes, Hook, I think maybe it'd be better if I just up and left.
Jim, it ain't right for you to even think of such a thing. You belong to Mrs. Douglas.
I know I'm her slave, Huck. But sometimes I can't help wondering if it's right.
Well, that's abolitionist talk. Being a slave is, well, it's sort of like wearing shoes. It's one of those things you got to accept whether you like it or not.
Well, if God intended you had to wear shoes, why wasn't you born that way?
Well, that's what I mean. You was born a slave, wasn't you, Jim?
You know that, Huck.
Well, then, God meant you to be a slave.
Huckleberry!
It's Miss Watson. Quick, hide your pipe, Hook.
Huckleberry!
Yes, ma'am.
It's nearly bedtime.
Yes, ma'am.
And mind, you come in the back way. What's that I smell? Huckleberry, have you been smoking?
Why, no, ma'am.
You aren't lying, Huck.
No, ma'am.
Then what's that pipe doing sticking out of your pocket?
Well, ma'am, you see, it's
you
well...
You know my sister and I don't like you to smoke. Huckleberry, you're an ungrateful boy.
Let him be, sister. I'll speak to him.
You're too gentle with the boy, lying to us.
I'll speak to him, please.
Well, then. All right.
My sister was very angry, Huck, because you lied.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm afraid you and I didn't have any excuse, did we?
No, Mrs. Douglas.
Sit down, Huck, and tell me why you lied about it.
Well, it's on account of the shoes, mainly, I think.
The shoes?
Yes, and you see, shoes and my feet don't seem to get on together. You see, I never wore them much, and... Well, don't your toes ever get hot?
Well, Huck, yes. But I'd look kind of silly without shoes, wouldn't I?
Yes, and I guess there's some people shoes is intended for, but the way it is with me, after I get the shoes on, my feet don't work right. And when I get them off, I know I can't go to school without them, and I know I can't get them back on till I kind of cool my feet off in the river, and... And then when I get my feet in the river, I can't put the shoes on till they're dry. And by the time my feet are dry, they're hot again and school started and I'm tardy and, well, the only thing that'll take my mind off of being tardy is a good pipe of tobacco. And that's why I smoke, ma'am.
But what's all that got to do with the lion, Huck?
Well, then, you see, I judge that Miss Watson'd be awful fussed if she knew I was smoking. So if she asked me if I did, I'd say I didn't.
I see, Huck. Then the shoes are really the cause of it all.
Yes, ma'am.
Suppose you wore your shoes all the time. Then they wouldn't worry you, and you wouldn't have to smoke to forget the worry, and you wouldn't have to lie.
Well, I'll try it, ma'am.
And if that doesn't work, we'll think of something else. Good night, Huck.
Good night, ma'am.
Happily, Huck climbs the stairs and goes into his bedroom. He's so cheerful that he doesn't notice he's being watched by a man. A man who sits with his chair propped against the wall. A man with long, tangled hair and a matted black beard. After recovering from his surprise, Huck manages to speak.
Oh, hello, Pap.
Ain't you a sweet-smelling dandy, though? You think you're a big bug, don't you?
Maybe I am, maybe I ain't.
Don't give me none of your lip. You're educated, too, they say. You know how to read and write. Who told you you might meddle with such highfalutin foolishness, huh? Who told you?
Well, the widow, she told me.
Are you her son? Has she got any legal right over you?
I guess not.
That's right.
Oh, don't make so much noise, Pap. You'll have the widow up here.
Well, maybe I want her up here.
Huckleberry.
I'm pleased to meet you, I'm sure.
Please, ma'am, if you'll just leave, I'll get him out of here.
Leave her be, Hucky. Said I wanted to see you, didn't I?
About what, Mr. King?
About Huck here. The way you've been putting frills on him and teaching him to read.
I should think you'd be thankful for that.
Thankful? His mother couldn't read. None of his family could read. I can't. Can't even read my own name. I don't like my son to take up with all that foolishness.
This is the first time I've ever heard of you even being interested in your son.
You like him quite a bit, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Then you'd be willing to pay so you can keep him.
I suppose you've decided just how much your son is worth to you.
Well, he's sort of puny. You could get a better slave for the price. But then I has to put up with people coming up to me and saying,
oh, I hear you Huck can read. And write, too.
Well, I guess $800 helped me forget all that.
That's a great deal of money for me to raise. When do you expect it?
I'll give you a week, or Huck will be back with me. But you're a clever old crow. You'll get it all right.
You take that back.
Who's going to make me?
I am.
Yeah? Well, you take this. Remember, that's a week from tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry he came, ma'am.
We all are, Huck.
Look, don't you go worrying yourself about that money. Let him take me.
No, Huck. We'll get it somehow. Then he won't be able to pester us anymore.
But I just plumb ain't worth $800. I'm always doing something. Lying or breaking things. Burning things. Smoking.
Those things aren't important, Huck. Why, tomorrow alone is big enough reward for anything I could ever do for you.
Tomorrow, ma'am?
You don't know how proud I'll be of you, my boy. To hear him call your name from the promotion list so I can turn to all those doubting Thomases and say, see, I told you Huck could do it.
Yes, ma'am.
Now you can see that even if we do have to make some little sacrifice, you'll more than repay it. Good night, Huck.
Good night, ma'am.
Unable to face the thought, disappointing the widow Douglas by his failure to get promoted, Huck runs away. As he heads toward the river, he's caught by his father, who takes him to a little shack on one of the river islands and holds him prisoner. Next morning, while his father is in town pestering the widow Douglas for money, Huck makes his escape. To prevent his being followed, Huck makes it look as though he's been murdered and his body thrown into the river. We see Huck now as he beaches his skiff on the shore just after having made his escape from the island. On the white sand of the beach, he discovers the smoldering remains of a fire. He starts to investigate. Suddenly, he sees a face peering through the screen of leaves.
Jim, look. Golly, I didn't know it was your fire. Say, Jim, what are you doing here?
Well, you wouldn't tell on me if I was to tell you.
Well, sure not.
Well, I run off.
Jim.
I had to, Huck. I just had to.
But you can't run off. You belong to the widow.
She was going to sell me, Huck. She was going to sell me to a slave trader. I heard her talking about it last night. She said she needed money bad, had to give it to your pap.
Oh.
If a traitor got me, I'd never get to that free state. I'd never get to see my wife. Or little Joey.
You ain't going to be sold, Jim. You're going back to the widow tonight, because now that I'm gone, she won't have to give pap any money. She He won't sell you now.
Still, I like this freedom. It's awful good to breathe your own air into your own chest. Couldn't me and you float on down, Hook? I built me a powerful raft. It's sitting right over yonder.
Stop that talk. I guess you know what they do to runaway slaves if they're turned in. Well, I'll take you over to town tonight.
You don't have to take me, Hook.
Well, I'd sort of like to go to town. Sneak around after dark and see what Pap's doing. Only I don't want you to tell the widow you see me here because she thinks I'm dead. Or if she don't now, she will soon. I fixed it up to look like I'd been murdered. I had to do it. It was the only way I could throw Pap off.
I bet the widow's mighty full of sorrow.
Yeah, doggone, I'd like to go to her and tell her I ain't dead, but then she'd keep me and Pap would start right in again and... Oh, come on, Jim, don't look so low. We don't have to go back to town yet. We got all afternoon to lazy around. Say, got any tobacco?
Yeah. Here you is, Hook.
Oh, it sure is nice here smoking and watching the old river. Yes, sir. This certainly is the lovey.
Huh?
Oh, that's French for life. The widow told me.
Oh, lovey. I never did learn that word. Don't the French people use the same words we do?
No, Jim, you couldn't understand a word they said. Not a single word.
Well, now, I'll be ding busted. Don't none of them talk like us?
Well, perhaps the kings and important ones, but not most of them.
That sure is silly of them. Why don't they all talk like us?
Well, you might as well ask why don't a cat or a cow talk like us. It's the same thing.
No, it ain't either. Is a cat a man?
No.
Or is a cow a man?
No.
Well, is a Frenchman a man?
Yes.
Well, then, Dad, blame it. Why don't they talk like a man? Answer me that.
As soon as it gets dark, Huck leaves Jim on the beach and sneaks into town. Posing as a girl, he learns that his murder has been discovered, that the townspeople are enraged, and that Jim is being blamed for it. A posse of men are gathering to run Jim down. Knowing that the men are sure to find Jim on his way back to the Widow Douglas, Huck runs frantically through the woods, manages to overtake Jim just a few hundred yards away from the posse.
Jim! Jim, they're after you!
Who, Huck? What?
We gotta get away from here! They're after you! Run!
What do you want me for, Huck?
Murder!
Well, who would I ever murder, Huck?
But they think you murdered me. We gotta get back to the raft, Jim.
An hour later, Huck and Jim are floating down the Mississippi on their raft. The stars are out. Jim sits at the stern holding the steering oar.
I figure we'll reach Cairo tomorrow night, don't you, Huck?
I figure so.
Lord, that sure will be heaven. And I got only one person to thank, and that's you, Huck.
Well, you know why I'm helping you. Because of Pap.
I don't care why you're doing it. Stealing all you're doing it. I don't figure that even an abolitionist could do a better job than you're doing, Huck.
Don't you call me that. You ain't in a free state yet. We might miss Cairo. Float right on past it.
But the Ohio joins the Mississippi there. We's bound to notice that.
Well, we'll probably pass it at night.
Then we'll see the light.
I hear there's only about a dozen houses there.
We won't miss it. Because I'll smell it. I'll smell that free state. I ain't going to miss this chance. I just want to be free. Nobody can take Jim back now. I ain't a slave no more, and I ain't going to be a slave no more. Says I's near Cairo, and I ain't going to miss it. The Lord God won't let me miss it. Will you, Lord?
Good old Jim. He did get to see his wife and little Joey. But before he did, him and me, we had some powerful adventures. You wouldn't believe me if I told you about them all. We met a real live duke and king. Leastways, we thought they was real till we found out that they was fakes and that they was trying to sneak a couple of sweet young girls out of a fortune. Believe me, there was lots of times on that trip when Jim and me was plenty scared. And I could tell you about them now, too, but jumping Jehoshaphat... I do need a smoke. Say, Jim, have you got any tobacco?
We're showing up, Huck.
Thanks, Jim. Hey, I understand the catfish is biting down by the willow bend.
Showing up?
Oh, sure enough, Jim.
Well, that sure is lucky, Huck, because I just happen to have some worms right here with me.
Thank you, Mr. Rooney, Miss Risden, Miss Blandick, Mr. Ingram, and Mr. Killian. And to you, Mr. Mankiewicz, our thanks for your direction of this preview, and I know that Huckleberry Finn will be another great hit added to your list of screen accomplishments.
Really sounded great to me, Mickey.
Oh, gee, thanks, Mr. Martin, Mr. Young, and, well, thanks, everybody.
All right, Mickey, you relax a minute while Tony Martin gives out a song from Joan Crawford's newest picture, The Ice Follies of 1939. It's all so new to me.
Oh, come. Right.
The stars...
above this night of ecstasy. They say it's as old as the hills, but it's also new to me. The way I feel in love, each thrill so heavenly. They say it's the oldest of thrills, but it's also new to me. Poets have stated for ages that angels are up in the blue. So have the greatest of sages, but darling, they never saw you. It's strange, but oh, so grand this thing you do to me. It may be old as the hills, but it's also wonderfully, excitingly, refreshingly new to me. Far above keeps on saying it's old as the hills, but it's also new to me.
The way I feel in love is heavenly.
All the love that I feel makes them say it's the oldest of thrills, but it's also new to me. Poets have stated for ages that angels are up in the blue. So have the greatest of sages, but darling, they never saw you. I know it's strange, but all so grand, this thing you do to me. It may be old as the hills, but it's all oh so wonderfully, excitingly, refreshingly new to me.
That was beautiful, Tony.
Yes, it was, Tony. Oh, but Bob, if you don't mind my saying so, I think you're about the best thing on this program.
Well, thank you, Daddy. What's the catch?
Oh, no catch, Bob, at all. It was just a sincere compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir, it's impossible not to notice the beauty and clarity of your voice when you talk.
Well, that's mighty nice. Thank you again.
Shall I recite now, Daddy?
Snow.
Oh, so that's it, huh?
What nonsense, Bob. I have no idea she wanted to recite. Still, if there's time, I'm sure everyone would enjoy it.
Now, Daddy.
Be quiet, Snooks. There's no reason to think you'll be allowed to recite at all.
No. What's the matter, Snooks?
Daddy said I could recite.
Oh, I never said anything.
Now, listen, Daddy. Evidently, you've allowed yourself to be bullied into promising the child she could recite. Well, Snooks, I'm very sorry, but we haven't time tonight. And so we'll take out an orchestra number to make room for it. What's she going to recite, Daddy?
Oh, she'll tell them all about it.
Now, Daddy?
Yes, now.
Simple Simon met a pieman going to the fair. Says Simple Simon to the pieman, let me taste your ware. Where?
Where?
Where? Says pieman to Simple Simon, show me first your penny. Says Simple Simon to the pieman, indeed, I have not any. Simple Simon went to town to buy a piece of meat. He tied it to his horse's tail to keep it clean and sweet. Simple Simon went to fishing for to catch a whale. All of what he had got was in his mother's pail. Simple Simon went to look if plums grew on a thistle.
He stuck
to his fingers very much, which made poor Simon thistle.
Whistle.
It was thistle before.
Let's whistle now.
More than 50 years ago tonight, in the stately dining room of a famous old hotel, a native of Nashville, Tennessee, Mr. G.A. Maddox, was sitting after dinner over a cup of coffee as another man approached his table.
Wires, Joel Cheek. Good evening to you, sir.
Evening, Mr. Maddox. I'm anxious to have your opinion of the coffee you're drinking. It's my new blend, you know.
I was just thinking, this is mighty good coffee. The finest, I believe, I've ever tasted.
Happy to know you're enjoying it, Mr. Maddox. I'm calling it Maxwell House, after the hotel.
That was more than half a century ago. Just the other day, we received this letter from Mr. C.R. Maddox of Flemington, New Jersey. When I was a child, Joel Cheek was our next-door neighbor. He and my father, who was a great lover of good coffee, were old friends, and he valued my father's opinion on coffee highly. I well remember the rejoicing in our whole neighborhood when the wonderful blend he called Maxwell House was first perfected by Mr. Cheek. I might say that since that time, I have used no other coffee than Maxwell House, and don't expect ever to change.
We hope you're listening in, Mr. Maddox, to receive our thanks for a letter we sincerely appreciate. Friends, from the day it was created, we never ceased our efforts to make Maxwell House the finest coffee you can possibly buy. And today, we think it is. Today, after months of effort and experiment, we're proud to announce, first, that Joel Cheek's original famous blend has been made richer, more delicious, more downright satisfying than ever before. You'll taste the difference in your very first steaming, fragrant cup. Then also, we've developed a new way of roasting Maxwell House called Radiant Roast, an amazing process which roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through, and so brings out the true, natural flavor of the superb new blend. This way, there's no chance of weak coffee due to under-roasting or bitter coffee due to parching. Your new Maxwell House is always full-bodied, always smooth and mellow. It's a fact that more people are enjoying Maxwell House today than ever before in its history. And we'd like you to discover why for yourself. Just order a pound tomorrow. We think you'll say this new Maxwell House is more than ever good to the last drop.
MGM's concert hall is honored with the appearance of Miss Melissa Cortes, who sings Franz Schubert's Serenade. Miss Cortes. For tonight. But before we go, Mickey.
Yes, Uncle Bob?
Mickey, you treated us to such a sterling performance tonight that Well, we feel we'd like to do something for you.
Well, if you really mean it, Uncle Bob, there is something I'd like you to do.
Well, just name it, my boy. Just name it.
Well, you know my new song, Have a Heart. How about you sing it?
Well, do you think singing it will help the sales any?
Well, I'd like to have you sing it anyway.
Well, I'd like to do it, Mick, but I don't know the words.
Well, don't worry about that. Here, I've got 15 or 20 copies right here with me. Here.
Well, how's the orchestra going to play it without music?
Well, I've got a few orchestrations with me, too. Here, Mr. Wilson, right there.
Okay, Mickey, I'll pass it out to the boys.
Rooney, the businessman, takes no chances. Okay, Mickey, but you got to help me.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, the latest hit song from the illustrious pen of that outstanding young composer, Michael Beethoven Rooney. Have a heart. Let's give love another chance. Let's renew our old romance tonight.
Gee, that sounds great, Mr. Young.
I have a hunk, Rooney.
Tonight we meet again, though you pretended our love had ended. But I can feel the flame, that same old flame. Take it, Mr. Young.
Grab your hat. So have a heart, though you told me you don't care. That old feeling must be there tonight. How are we doing, Mickey?
Well, we're selling quite a few copies.
And here we are together. You know that this is the time to have a heart, and they are mine.
Thanks, Mr. Young. How about you, Mr. Morgan?
My heart. Say, Mickey, this song is really very fine.
Well, thank you.
Yes, you know, I wrote quite a few songs in my time. I'll never forget.
Frank!
Yes, well, good night.
Daddy, you sing this song.
Not tonight, not a note, dear.
Why?
Well, Daddy's got a sore throat, dear.
Oh, sing it anyhow.
Snooks, don't start a row, please. Have a heart. Oh, Daddy's worked hard all day long.
And you want to sing this song, Daddy?
No. Ah! I'll sing it, Snooks.
So here we are together. You know that this is the time to have a heart and say you're mine.
Have a heart. Start, part, start, cart, mark.
Meredith, what are you doing?
Well, I'm just seeing how many rhymes I can make.
Oh, go away. Warren, how about you?
Okay. Tonight, I say again, drink Maxwell House coffee, because Maxwell House coffee is the very top to the very last drop.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks, everyone, for singing my song. Now I guess I'll just run along. Good night.
Good night, Mickey. Well, so here we're all together. Next week at this very same time, when we will have as our special guest, charming Eleanor Powell, Harry Warren, America's great hit song composer, and our regular cast of Good News favorites, go to the movies and take the family with you. Be sure and see Norma Shearer and Clark Gable in Idiot's Delight. This is Bob Young, saying good night.
This is Warren Howell saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcast.